And welcome, 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 dear listeners, wherever you find yourself. Welcome to your midday and ultimately being your drive time particular news bulletin program here known as On the Radar. We'll really take a short break and we come back right after this.
On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Welcoming you back to the rest of your program, and ultimately that being the On the Radar here on your number one talk radio station. Welcoming you to as specifically as we take a look on your this particular Wednesday edition in terms of the events as well as also developments coming through from Namibia, as well, that being national, as well as also through the rest of the world in terms of the international news segment. Just before we start off, dear listeners, do remember the in terms of your connectivity to us on a daily basis, bringing you the various particular discussions and developments across the country and internationally. You can download the Eagle FM application, which is free to download on either the Google platform or the Apple iStore platform. And secondly, on top of that, to stay connected in terms of various discussions, you can also take a look at our frequency map that's found either in the Villager ePaper platform, which highlights primarily the closest frequency, you know, that you can log on to or connect to in terms of listening to your daily programs, as well as also your daily broadcasts. Finally, you can also stream us through the Eagle FM website. That is, all you've got to do is Google search us, eaglefm.com.na, and specifically do remember to enable the audio button in terms of streaming your favorite programming. That'll ultimately also give you an indication in terms of the archive, which is known as our podcast section on the website. That'll give you access to some of your favorite past discussions, as well as also favorite programming with some of your insightful, more insightful presenters that we've had, that obviously being past and present, highlighting some of the insightful discussions, just to sort of like jog your memory and all that. Now, starting off in earnest with today's discussion, as always, we start off with the local news segment here on your number one talk radio station. As always, this takes us all the way through to 2:30, whereby you'll be in my company in that regard, and ultimately where we've got to take a look at some of the particular developments happening across the country in that regard. Now, just to let you know, dear listeners, that specifically if you have time, and if we do have time specifically to engage ultimately about some of the particular talking points coming through in today's particular reports, you can always come through at 083-288-401, but that'll only be after all the particular local news aspects have been satisfied, I meaning all the particular reports, just before we start off with the international news segment. First on our menu for today, the biodiversity engagement known as the Biodiversity Finance Initiative's stakeholder consultation took place earlier today, which is aimed to look at policies and trends of recent activity in the realm of the national biodiversity, was held in Windhoek. Now, it focused on the role that financing can play and have in the biodiversity sector of Namibia and its activities that are related to the various sectors that impact the biodiversity that is contained in these respective economic activities. Now, Angus Middleton, the head of the Namibia Nature Foundation, outlined the role and contribution that many activities associated with biodiversity of Namibia have had on the generation of economic value to the country. In his presentation of policy regarding the impact of diversity and its activities, titled the Namibia Biodiversity Expenditure, which are lessons from the resource mobilization project, activities like tourism, agriculture and agri-processing were the main generators in this aspect. But we take a listen to this.
So Christian mentioned that BioFin started, I think, 2010. And at around that time, GRZ and the Ministry of Environment and Tourism were busy formulating a project that then came into being in 2013, known as the ResMob project. It wasn't an official BioFin project, but it worked very closely with BioFin and used the BioFin methodology. So it probably There's a few people in this room that were involved in that project directly, and some of them received training, including some BioFin training.
That's right.
Okay. Somebody's excited online. That's good. All right. Go to the next slide. So, the value of nature and the need to invest in it, Bernadette covered some of this, but really, this came out of the, let's go back a second. We all know about climate change, and we've known about it for a long time, but it really came into the conscious of everyone with two key moments. Climate change had its Al Gore moment, the inconvenient truth, where at a political level, the world suddenly realized that they needed to engage in it. And shortly after came the Stern Report. And the Stern Report was the first major environmental economic report that cut into business. And business suddenly realized, actually, climate change is our business. If we don't address issues of climate change, we will go out of business. So that created a lot of momentum. It resulted in, for example, the Adaptation Fund in the US, the Green Climate Fund, and all of those massive investments. And all around, you see a lot of investments in climate finance. But climate is really just the symptom of the things that are going wrong on the planet. The basis of life is biodiversity, and that's what we really need to take care of. Unfortunately, biodiversity hasn't had its Al Gore moment. It cannot be reduced to a simple metric like carbon. But it has had a lot of good work with Pavan Sukhdev and his team around the economics of ecosystems and biodiversity. So the BioFin process came at a time when it was able to ride on this in the Millennium Ecosystem Services assessments that were also done through the UN system. And really what that does is it takes three, sometimes four, depending on which classification you use. For the ResMod project, we use three. Ecosystem productivity, the functioning and resilience of ecosystems, and then the structure and organization giving rise to these provisioning, regulating, and cultural services. And Bernadette earlier touched on most of those, at least at a light level. So the first part of the TEAP project process was to review some of the provisioning, regulating, and cultural services and how they're being distributed across Namibia. Next slide, please. It takes time to load. So with that, we were able to do at a very high level, and these numbers are now dated. So these are dated back to, I think this was done for 2018, if I remember correctly. So you had different provisioning services, which included game, purely as trophies, which highlights how important they can be. So just a few, comparatively few animals producing 1.1% of the value. Game meat, inland fisheries, also quite important. But then the big things, food and medicine, non-woody resources, woody resources, biomass, for example. And then livestock and fodder. So a very strong linkage to agriculture. Next, please.
Now, the kinds of activities and the kinds of land use being applied in the biodiversity economic activity concept also highlighted the high use of biodiversity in the broader economic participation of the country, thus at least contributing to 9% to the national GDP of Namibia, and this being dated as at 2018, it indicates these levels according to government and development partner statistics. We take a listen to what was also further highlighted by Middleton.
Also, cultural services. This was done using an interesting methodology. So the team, which was mainly Anchor Environmental, but also some of my colleagues at the MNF, I think there's a person at the back, Bertha, was involved in this. So what they did was they looked at the total value of tourism from the national statistics, And they're able to distribute it across the country by taking publicly sourced, geographically tagged images, which clearly show where people go and take photos. And on the assumption that those photos are taken in a recreational sense, you can distribute where the nature-based tourism occurs. And it's really quite interesting. So you can see down in the south, this little route that goes through to Lüberitz, up through the desert, you very clearly see Susuzkwey, you see Swakopmund, Windhoek, and then you see Etosha. What's also very interesting is that if you overlay it with the protected areas, about 40% generated in protected areas, and then around 30% on freehold land and around 30% of the value in communal areas, so on conservancies and to a lesser extent community forests. So that was the distribution of cultural services, which are really critical. Tourism is a major component of GDP. Next slide, please. Supporting services, so very important for Namibia. Things like groundwater recharge. You can see where a lot of that occurs and the extraction can take place. This was followed with a study on bush encroachment and how that impacts on groundwater. And it actually helped to make the case for why there should be an investment into tackling the issue of bush encroachment. The value over 25 years to the Namibian economy, I think, was estimated at $25 billion. And that today has resulted in, amongst other things, the investment in the Ochikoto biomass power plant. Part of that will help to provide recharge groundwater services, groundwater. Pest control services as well. If natural habitats were degraded or lost, pest damages would increase, and we're able to calculate that, and then carbon storage as well. And that was done at two different values, a global value and then a local value. So what this basically did was it set the scene, particularly for policymakers, as to what the value of nature in Namibia is, and it makes the case for investment. So back then in 2018, the total value with imperfect figures was estimated at over 13 billion Namibian dollars, which if in today's value is probably just over 1.1 billion US dollars if you take.
Now, coming back from what was explained there by Middleton, the aspect in terms of policy review and laws and acts, and this specifically highlighting the particular existing legislation that is available in Namibia regarding biodiversity financing, Grace Shepo from the Biofin stakeholders noted that the extensive review of laws, acts, and policies have to be done that work. And ultimately have to take a look at the notion in terms of the relevance of these frameworks and their impact on the relevant stakeholders and participants in this regard. We take a listen to what she added.
Actually, part of a four-step process towards development of the financial plan for the country, which is the bottom circle there in the picture. And then the policy and institutional review, it's top there. So there is three other processes, or two other processes. First is for us to establish where we stand or we currently are with our policies, our acts, and our institutions. And then we identify the financial needs that we may require to capacitate our institutions and our frameworks. And also establish what biodiversity expenditure we have currently, how can we strengthen that, and then all these three will then inform the overall financial plan for the country. And all this, as stated, there is a biodiversity finance program that is overseeing or helping to establish all these objectives that we are undertaking. So there is a biofilm workbook that is a guiding tool to provide all the necessary mechanisms that we need to help us get to that biodiversity finance plan for the country. So the objectives for the PIR, I'll keep saying PIR, policy and institutional review. First is to understand how management of biodiversity and ecosystem services support national sustainable development goals and visions. To establish a comprehension of key policy and institutional drivers of biodiversity change. Document existing biodiversity finance mechanisms in the country. Incentives, subsidies, which some can be negative, and other instruments, including sources of biodiversity revenue. And finally, to recommend preliminary finance solutions to address the identified gaps. So as I mentioned, we are working under guidance of the biofilm workbook, the current one is for 2024. So the step that we are undertaking as part of the PIR process is a five-stepwise process. First is to define the scope of analysis, where we are identifying, where we have to identify the information sources, the institutions, the stakeholders, as well as come up with an engagement plan. Since you are here, we have a very good representation of institutions. Of course, we would have loved to see more. I'm not sure if we have institutions of high learning. Hopefully we do. Then we have to undertake a desk review of key documents, strategies, national development plans, the acts, policies, as well as the financial policies and fiscal policies that will really inform how is expenditure rolled out in the country, and to identify trends and drivers for biodiversity. Some I've mentioned can be positive, some can be negative, and how these influence development against biodiversity in the country. Then eventually also establish the biodiversity finance landscape for the country. Where do we stand? How is our budgeting process? And also our sources of bio-based.
We'll quickly take a short break and we come back right after the ad break to continue with the report.
Taking flight has never been easier. Paratus is introducing SkyFi internet packages with speeds that will have you reaching for your seatbelt. Starting from $500 million, excluding VAT, per month, with speeds reaching up to 10 megabits per second. There's even a prepaid option where you can top up your SkyFi internet for just $15 million per gigabyte. No contracts, no fuss. Visit your nearest Paratus branch to find out more. Or go to paratus.africa/Namibia to sign up online. Always prepare,
Paratus. Coming back from the quick break right there, dear listeners, we continue with the report where we left off.
Biological-based revenues, like park entry fees that we're talking, those are some of the sources of revenue that we have. Then finally, we'll have to come up with key recommendations, excuse me, that would then inform the finance solutions that we can implement as part of our biodiversity finance plan for the country. So I mentioned that we have to first establish what frameworks acts we have in the country and at what level they are. So this first slide just gives you a snapshot of some of the key acts that we identified, and you will see that the time that some of these acts were enacted, for example, the oldest being the Soil Conservation Act of 1969, and we see how far we have come as a country. Do we still want to maintain that 1969 Act? How is it still relevant to the emerging economies, etc.? Then on your right, or is it left? Then it's just the purposes. It's shortened, and I wouldn't want to bore you with that. Let's look into the weaknesses and gaps. One of the questions asked was emerging economies or emerging industries. For example, the Environmental Management Act of 2007, we have identified gaps or weaknesses in the act that it's quite silent on emerging industries. For example, the phosphate that has since gone silent, other emerging industries like green hydrogen. So how do we then want to move with the times when we have our acts that are somehow silent on emerging industries?
Coming back from that specific report, we step into our next, which takes us to the recently kicked off public engagements regarding the Venus oil block. Now, this is as Total Energy and NAMCOR has recently kicked off their public engagements with interested or affected parties or persons in Windhoek, that being on Tuesday, regarding the Venus oil discovery in the Orange Basin, which is located off the southern coast of Namibia, which is about 320 kilometers from Lüderitz and 300 kilometers from Oranjemund. Now, Robin Christians of the environmental consultant to the project, SLR Consultants, explains the various dimensions of impact that they've had to look into or look at in terms of impacted biodiversity and local urban settlements. Now, these included the scope of economic activity to be impacted by any drilling or shipping activity and any underwater plant or animal life that would be impacted by any particular extraction activity. We take a listen to this part.
So as stated, oil and gas remain important for industry and energy demand, even with the fast growth of renewables and alternative energy sources. Namibia's policies around this have some specific aims. There is a call to reduce greenhouse gas emissions over time. Energy transition does not happen overnight. There will be a lot of things that we need to do. In order to sustain or to support a zero-emission economy. There's a need to ensure there's affordable energy now and in the future, and build the economy and develop the future sustainably, and also to utilize our natural resources, including oil and gas, to drive economic growth. What will our authorities consider when looking at this? What are these current national strategic policies? And how does that impact the transition to net zero carbon emissions? The need for economic growth, which needs to be balanced with the potential impacts and risks associated with any proposed project. So what does it look like out there? So the two proposals on the right, they come from the Environmental Baseline Survey. That's what it looks like when you see the floor. You'll see that it's a mostly sandy mud. And previous machine, it's very well shore. And there's really high productivity and planting levels. So basically not too much happening out there. In terms of sensitive areas, conservation, the Venus Oil is adjacent to the Orange Cinnamon and the Canyon Complex. Excess, which are ecologically and biologically significant marine areas, are important in terms of the ecological and biological characteristics, but also provide support to surrounding ecosystems. They are not protected, but portions could be considered for future conservation or in support of conservation areas. At this time, no evidence of sensitive habitats were found, as informed by the U.S. There's no marine protected environment, no important bird areas, and the habitats are classified as least threatened. To note, the green areas are ecological support areas. So they're aware of if there's degradation between the red areas to be used as sort of an offset. So we have degradation, we use those areas to support the green and the red, and so hopefully they restore ecological function. None of these areas prohibit oil and gas exploration or production. Fishing activities. So the important one is the settlement of mesh. That's the large pelagic logging island. And we measure this in terms of type of So how do we measure effort? In this case, it's a matter of hooks. How many hooks would it be in a season? You see there, we're sitting in a yellow hook. So yellow means less than 5,000 hooks were deployed in a season. So we really want fishing is online and it's got lots of little hooks on it, and we go around and look to catch something. It's very hard to determine how much effort something takes, so we resort to something effective, but we can't, in this case it is the hooks. For context, this is less than 5,000, and the dark red, meaning here, is in excess of 30,000 hooks. So we make an assumption here that hooks demands effort, high, deep red, high effort, yellow, low effort. Here we have the offshore spawning areas for various species. We can't really see the names there, I apologize. But these are the breeding grounds for different species of fish. So you'll see that most spawning happens here along the coastline and not generally here in the deeper waters. Fish are pretty safe in calmer waters. Why do we care about this area? As previously discussed by Lucas, there will be the kind of shipping areas up north here, and the shuttle has to run this route. So this is King of Hayley. You see that it's not really impacted on the area. There's some activity on the borders, but nothing within the sphere, and same good news of four efforts.
Now, getting back from that particular first explanation provided by Christians regarding the particular exploration activities, which is also takes a look at the environment around it in the Orange Basin. The second dimension that you also highlighted was that of fishing activity, which is associated to most of the economic activities in the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Lüderitz and Oranjemund. We take a listen to what she explains.
What the towns look like that could be potentially impacted? Rockfish Bay, the water is in the north, the water is also poor, cable and shipping is quite a lot, and it is a place for exploration, and gas operators. It is a small, shallow place. It does support some fishing and mining, and also does support offshore exploration of gas activities, and there's a minor industrial development. However, the moment is a distance to diversify. So, some sort of solar lines and diamond mining, there's some movement in the tourism regional services. In terms of cultural heritage, many of the shipwrecks along the coastline, but not expected in this area. In terms of the cultural heritage, should be varied and influenced by various people on the coast, and some connection with the ocean and the sea could be visible. This work depends on special study, at this point in time is believed that Indians, indigenous people, have a deeper connection with the beach, rituals and such happen along the shoreline, and less so on the deeper offshore environment. However, this would be assessed and subject to a specialist study. So how do we study impacts? First, we need to identify impacts. So like I said, we're scoping at the moment, and we are identifying impacts by considering the following. So what effects do public activities have? Is there noise generation? Is there pollution screens? Will there be income generation? Income loss perhaps? Impacts on the ecology and so forth. You can clearly address this in a particular area, which is what we call the sectors. So who is there that can receive the impact? Who are the animals to be used? And then how can the project to these efforts receptors? So could they be disturbed? Could they be an impact on health? Could they be displaced? Could they be impacts on income? During the impact assessment phase, we actually assess the impacts. So those that were identified in the step 1, we're now carrying them to the next step. So in this case, there will be 12 modeling studies. We'll be going to model the area affected by different potential effects. We'll identify the sectors that may be affected, identify how those sectors are affected, and then rate the significance of the findings are presented in the draft and show report. The draft and show report is essentially a consolidation of our various special studies that we do to sort of access to the individual impact assessments. So here are some that we've identified potential impacts. Note that everything is still subject to the special study. And then moving ecology, but the changes to the seabed from material discharge to sea liability. Equipment and infrastructure and then place on the seabed. It's potential that this can affect animals and plants on the seabed. If there are any support plants in the seabed.
We continue with the report just after the short break.
Onkundana ombwanawa kani hauto. Owa pumbwa oshimaliwa mendelelo. Ndele ouna oshiendiso. Ouna anilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa. Ashike mboka ina onjodoe otaende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo tayinyengana. Autocash, otei ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto e, etopewa e presendo wa mirongo le natano, dongushu yoshi endito shoe. Mule ashike, uwe mintetilo mirongo le natano. Ino pumbwa oka payslip, nenge o statement ayombanga. Ohauto yoe ashike. Mona omula, oshimaliwa, ethimbo weshi pumbwa.
Easy money.
Tu dengera nena, ko, nora hamano yume, ne nora nora, hamano, heari hamano. Ano, ko, nora hamano yumwe, ne nora nora, hamano, heari hamano. O shipulera, ko, otokesh.
We come back there from the short ad break and continue where we left off with the report coming through from the public pay stakeholder engagement that was conducted by the relevant stakeholders like Total Energy, Namcor, and the environmental consultants associated with the Venus oil discovery in the southern, off the southern coast of Namibia.
Changes to sea level quality, discharges, and also the evaporators, discharging the production process. It could also, this could affect animals and habitat. And then the increase in underwater noise due to vessels, can also possibly, can disturb and possibly injure, animals in the area. Fisheries, it could be shown in the shore drainage, around vessels, can drain, goes into the top of the extrusion zone, safety zone. So, no ships, including fishery ships, will be able to enter that area. And fish move. So, he may spawn, moving the awareness of the water is going to disturb. So the money inputs, there would be income and employment for workers and suppliers. There could be potential loss of income from fisheries, depending on what that impact is. Capacity building and training. Making sure people are ready for the oil and gas industry. Government income from taxes. And also possible change in sense of place or cultural heritage. There's also emissions to air, air pollution and greenhouse gas release, due to flooding, which is a technical thing, emissions flying around, vessel exhaust streams, emissions to production. This should be right up against our national commitments. The media has also set standards on how we just have that impact on. And then a big one, unplanned events. So a spill should never happen, but because it has such a large impact, it definitely needs some of these sort of contingencies. The impacts are large, they can travel massive distances. You can see where pollution from the oil spill, but coastal activities and income affect people's cultural roots at sea, the least pollutants into the air and water, affect the health of animals at sea. They have fishing vessels for fishing in the blue area and reducing fishing in the area. The spread of this study, the Italian study, is an example of the capping step in case of So, as previously stated, there will be four modeling studies. One for oil spills, one for daily discharge, and one for effluent modeling, and one for underwater noise modeling. These four models are given to the specialists, as a lot of them are difficult, to use in their conducting their effect assessment. So, as an example, marine ecology, we look at the oil spill model and determine what fauna is in the area, how it would be affected. There is one in the study that tells us where the oil goes. Marine ecology will tell us what's in the way, what could be affected, for how long, those sorts of things. On the right hand side, those are our special studies and the various specialists that will provide input.
Stepping on to our next particular item on today's program, we took a look at the Electricity Control Board's recent discussion regarding the electricity supply industry resolutions that were made public back in March of this year. Now, Petrus Ioannis from the ECB, along with colleagues from the ECB as well, that being Pinyas Matota as well as also Tamaline Morocco, held a public engagement on Tuesday regarding the electricity supply industry resolutions, the ESI, and that these were board-approved resolutions from the ECB that have direct impacts on the supply side of the electricity in Namibia and the infrastructure grid-related aspects of the landscape.
The control board that emanated from our board meeting that happened on the 27th of March 2025. So, in line with Section 11(2) of the Electricity Act 2007, which makes provision that the ECB board meetings are open to members of the public, I wish to share with you this afternoon the following ESI-related decisions taken by the ECB board at its meeting of the 27th of March, 2025. So there are a couple of regulatory tools, codes, and framework that was approved by the board. So we'll start with the transmission grid code. The approved revised transmission grid code, which I am going to abbreviate as TGC throughout this briefing. The purpose of this code, it establishes the rules and procedures to allow person to use the power systems, permit the power system to be planned and operated safely, reliably, efficiently, as well as economically. The code was initially promulgated in 2018. And why are we reviewing? So the review of this code was spearheaded by the Grid Code Advisory Committee, which is chaired by ECB, as well as the licensee, in this case specifically NamPower and the distributor. So, and the reason for the review is not just that the document is a bit outdated. It is also to cater for technological advancements and changes in the ESI, which is the electricity supply industry, such as the modified single buyer market model, as well as alignment to the SADC regional code. As a country, our power system is connected to the neighboring country, and it's just important that our code also speak to the regional code. I'm just going to share with you some of the key changes that were brought into the document. The revised draft document, I will call it that way because it still need to proceed to the ministry for the promulgation process. But the draft document is a public document that is available for everybody on our website. So some of the key changes that were brought about was the removal of the connection issues to the connection code. So as part of aligning to the regional code, the connection issues, if you want to connect to the transmission system, was contained in the transmission grid code, but in terms of alignment, these issues will now be contained in this into a separate document, which we'll call the connection code. Another addition to that was brought about by the review is the issue of cybersecurity section, which was not there. Because we are interconnected and the issue of cybersecurity is becoming imminent, the hackers are using electricity infrastructure somehow to deal with hacking. So this was one of the sections that was brought in. The other addition was the transmission system market code sections that deals with power system market issues. And then lastly, it is an emphasis on the training of system controllers in terms of our to the distribution grid code. So the transmission grid code into the Namibia context deals specifically with NamPower because they deal with transmission. So the distribution grid code, this is now the one that deals with electricity distribution at distribution levels, and it specifically speak to the regional electricity distributors, the like of City of Windhoek and other local authorities that are doing electricity distribution. So the approved revised distribution grid code, which is the DGC, establishes the rules and procedures which allow individuals or entities to use the distribution network and permit distribution network to be planned, operated safely, reliably, efficiently, and economically. Also initially developed and promulgated in 2018, so the two grid codes were developed at the same time. Why did we have to review the grid code? Just like the transmission grid code, the distribution grid code needed to be reviewed to cater for technological advancements in the industry, such as the MSB market model and also equally align it to the SADC regional grid code. The review was equally spearheaded by the Grid Code Advisory Committee in consultation with the ESI stakeholders. So all this document was developed by the ECB in consultation with the affected stakeholders. Allow me now just to highlight some of the key changes that were brought about by this review. Just like with the transmission grid code, all the distribution connection issues were removed from the distribution grid code, and then they were transferred to the connection code that we'll speak to in a while. There was also a section specifically that dealt with cybersecurity. There was also a new specific section that deals with distribution power system market codes. The details, as I say, are in the documents. The very same document also with what is happening in Namibia also speaks to the training of system controllers. Even at distribution levels, any work that happens on the distribution system need to be managed and sanctioned by the system controllers. So with this review, we are putting an emphasis on training those system controllers. Another addition into the code is the addition of the embedded generators and energy storage user section that was not there. You might have seen a lot of solar system popping up at household levels and malls. So there's a specific section that was actually added to deal with those type of connections. So the connection code, as I've indicated, the approved new connection code was formulated during the review of the transmission grid code. And this was in order to align with international best practices and SADC regional grid code. The connection code therefore contains all connection issues from both the transmission grid code as well as the distribution grid code. Also added to the connection code is all section of the draft renewable energy grid code. So this was the renewable energy grid code was developed by the ECB 2 years back. It was on its way for promulgation, but when we have initiated these reviews and also in terms of best practice, so the promulgation process was withheld. So all the section of that draft code also form parts of this new connection code. Equally, the development process was also spearheaded by the Grid Code Advisory Committee in consultation with the ESI stakeholders. As a regulator, we can't do anything in isolation. We always make sure that we involve the stakeholders, the ones that will make use of the documents. The other tool that was also approved by the board is the embedded generation standard. The approved embedded generation standards, first, maybe in terms of what it means, it refers to on-site generation and supply of electricity by a generation plant connected to a distribution grid. That's the underscore. It basically deals with those generation, the solar installation that I've mentioned at household levels for own use, that is sort of embedded in the distribution grid, primarily for own use. So why do we have to develop this standard? The development was necessitated by the need to have a harmonized, legally binding, and enforceable Namibian national standard to guide embedded generation activities within the ESI. So there was a gap. As Namibia, we were using the South African standard to deal with this application. And the purpose of this standard is now for us to have got our very own. So it is now approved by our board, so it need to make its way to the Namibia Standard Institution.
Coming back and heading to our next particular item, specifically heading into the discussion provided coming through from the Kavango East. Now, Magdalena Joe, a 29-year-old small-scale farmer from Rundu in the Kavango East region, had spoke to Eagle FM's Anakleta Hekera earlier this morning, where she has noted specifically that they are still waiting for the opportunity to harvest their crops due to the damage that was caused by heavy rainfall in this first part of the year. Now, according to Joe, she farms various vegetables at the Vungu Vungu farm, which her grandmother had entrusted to her to manage. Now, she also expressed hope for a better harvest despite the particular setbacks of at the start of 2025. Now, Joe also encouraged young people to get involved in agriculture, emphasizing the importance of commitment by saying crops need to be treated like babies, she said, highlighting the care and dedication that farming requires. Now, we take a listen to what our Kavango East reporter Anakleta Hekera had reported on this particular development.
Okay, so when did you start harvesting and how long did it take you when you were doing the process?
Okay, the whole process of planting to harvest takes about 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so planting, when you usually plant, it takes about a month on the seed bed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you transplant. From there in the field, it's going to take 2.5 months to 3 months. That's usually the time we start harvesting, especially on the things like leafy cabbage and spinach. It's usually 2.5 months to 3 months. With onions, it's about 3 to 4 months.
Okay. Do you perhaps have a specific month that you do the harvesting?
Yeah, usually our first harvest comes in around May to June.
Okay.
Yeah, like if we are early, like if we transplanted in March, then we're going to harvest in June.
Mm-hmm.
But then if we transplant, let's say in, like now we were late, we transplanted some in March and now we're transplanting in April, so it's going to be somewhere in June. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in, yeah, like spinach, it will be somewhere in May. And then the tomatoes and onions, like June, July, this way.
Okay. Now, as a small-scale farmer, did you face any challenges during planting period?
Yes, the challenges were a lot. Like, number one was rain.
Okay.
Heavy rain, they disturbed us a bit because we don't use seed trays, we plant on the ground.
Hmm.
So most of the seeds we planted first, they died.
Okay.
And then even the ones that made it, yeah, they survived, but not so well because, you know, there was a lot of water and mm-hmm. it was not getting any space to drain out.
Okay.
And also in the field, we were flooded like the entire field, so we had to stall things. We had to wait until the water drained out for us to transplant, which initially resulted in us transplanting overgrown seedlings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How big is the field and what are you looking forward to?
The field is 1.6 hectares.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to a lot because this is basically my first year as a manager. So I really want to, you know, do a good job because last year, you know, I was just also navigating things and the other year. Mm-hmm. But now this year, my grandmother decided like, no, I'm going to manage everything in the field. So now the aim is I just want to maximize production and improve our profit because
mm-hmm.
last year we didn't do so well.
Okay. As a young farmer, what advice do you have out there for others that are joining in agricultural fields?
My advice, like first of all, is agriculture is good, but you have to be like really determined and committed.
Mm.
Because it's gonna shake you, like, I'm not gonna lie, agriculture is going to shake you, it's going to test you,
mm-hmm.
and you need to be resilient and strong in all those moments, because you're gonna need that patience and, you know, determination to push through. even like when you're faced with challenges.
Okay.
Yeah, so the agriculture is a very demanding, let me say, field, especially when it comes to the inputs. They are very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And also you need patience to make sure that your things are growing well as you want them. You also need to constantly monitor and check up on your things. You cannot just plant and leave the things and expect them to look nice. So it's like a never-growing baby. So it's like you have to keep on feeding that baby that never grows. Yeah, that's the way I can put it. So it's like you cannot abandon the things like, okay, now I planted, so everything is going to take care of itself. No, you have to keep on working until you have it.
All right.
And the more you work, the better you harvest to produce.
Now, thank you very much, Maggie, for speaking to Eagle FM.
All right.
Coming back from that quick report, this does bring us up to the end of the local news segment. We'll quickly take a short break and come back right after that, heading into the international news segment.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Coming back from the short break right there, we step into our international news segment, and specifically starting off internationally with regarding all the developments that have actually been popping off regarding the Trump trade war with the rest of the world. Now, we specifically take a look, as investors know it has been a tumultuous time in the stock market since Donald Trump returned to the White House in January. On Tuesday, another record was also set, this time as gold had surged to an all-time high of just over $3,500 an ounce on the global spot market. This rally comes on the heels of sharp losses in stock markets following Trump's tariff announcements, with investors seeking a safe haven in terms of turning to gold. We take a listen to this report.
Donald Trump returned to the White House back in January, and Tuesday saw another record being set. Gold surged to an historic high of just over $3,500 an ounce on the global spot market. And that price increase comes after sharp losses across stock markets following Trump's tariff announcements. Investors are looking for a safe haven, and they are turning to gold. But the volatility in the markets has also been fueled by Donald Trump's public criticism of Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell. Trump has called for an immediate cut in interest rates. The president also labeling Powell a major loser on social media on Monday. Last week, the White House economic advisor said the president and his team were studying whether they could fire Powell.
This escalation has raised concerns about the potential erosion of the U.S. Fed's independence. Here's Donald Trump speaking on Friday.
Prices are coming down, not going up. Only the fake news says they're going up. The only thing that's even are interest rates. And if we had a Fed chairman that understood what he was doing, interest rates would be coming down too. He should bring them down. Yeah, please.
Well, I'm joined now by Sandra Navidi. She's the CEO of the New York-based advisory firm Beyond Global. Sandra, it's good to see you again. So I want to start with maybe the big picture here. How much of the current gold rally is directly tied to political risks, i.e. Donald Trump?
Everything circles back to Donald Trump's policies, or I should say the lack thereof. Donald Trump, with his unpredictability and policies that don't make sense, have unsettled investors. And historically, the United States has always been a safe haven in terms of crises, in terms of financial risks. Investors would take refuge to the dollar-denominated assets, treasuries, and that doesn't work anymore. And that shows you that there is a flight, a longer-term flight out of U.S. assets, which is very disconcerting.
Yeah, I mean, we are seeing U.S. Treasury yields spiking yet again alongside these gold prices soaring, usually seen as opposing signals. What is the bond market telling us about investor sentiment right now?
The increase in risks means that investors want to pay less for risk because risk is greater, and we're seeing that across all asset classes.
And Sandra, how unusual or dangerous is it for a U.S. president to openly pressure the Federal Reserve the way that we're seeing right now, Donald Trump with Jerome Powell?
This is unprecedented. Donald Trump is the personification of systemic risk because investors usually trust in the independence of central banks. And in the past, for instance, when we look at the crisis of 2008, first of all, we've seen that political factions work together, the Democrats and the Republicans, and then politicians work together internationally. And most importantly, almost central banks cooperated. And now Donald Trump is undermining the Federal Reserve's independence. The Federal Reserve is supposed to make its policies based on data, based on fundamental macroeconomic insights. And if it were to be pressured by the president, or if the president, worst case, like he said, I can do monetary policy much better than Jerome Powell, if he exerted undue influence on the Federal Reserve, it would shake investors' confidence even more than it is already, and it would undermine the whole global financial construction.
What do you think would happen? How would markets react if the president tries to remove Jerome Powell?
Well, we're already seeing, whenever he talks about it, we're seeing increased dramatic volatility. And what I'm seeing with investors here on Wall Street, the sentiment is we need to de-risk, something that you traditionally would hear with regard to emerging markets. We need to reduce our risk when it comes to the United States. We need to diversify more also in terms of currencies. The dollar is not the reliable currency that it used to be. And the reason for the gold price, because you mentioned gold earlier, is also that other central banks are increasing their purchases of gold. And part of it are the same considerations that investors have, but also because the Federal Reserve and also the European Central Bank froze Russian assets. And that also shook the confidence of international central banks. That was another factor that U.S. institutions may not be as reliable as they used to be.
President Trump's press secretary said earlier today that Trump wants the U.S. dollar to remain the world's reserve currency. Why do you think it's important for the White House to communicate this message? I mean, that's unprecedented in itself to hear that coming from the White House, but why do you think the president thinks it's important to say that?
Well, I think that's primarily due to the influence of Scott Bessent, his Secretary of the Treasury, because we have seen, as soon as investors lose trust in the United States, also as a borrower, that increases borrowing costs. We know the debts of the United States are at a historic high. And so the whole worry, I think, of investors also is, also when we look at Donald Trump's business history, where bankruptcy one after the next, and he relied on banks to bail him out. And the worry right now is that Donald Trump is steering the economy towards a crash and then hopes for the Federal Reserve to bail it out. But the Federal Reserve cannot counteract nonsensical economic policies, basically, I should say non-existent policies, because Donald Trump wants to bring back, for instance, manufacturing to the United States without any industrial policies.
Mm-hmm.
We had industrial policies under Biden's, for instance, the Chips and Science Act or the Inflation Reduction Act, which Donald Trump wants to axe. And so it's not going to work. And there's nothing that the Federal Reserve could do, even if it wanted to.
One question before we run out of time. The U.S. president has been very vocal in his criticisms of the European Union. It makes me wonder then, we've seen him in the last few days mentioning on Truth Social the European Central Bank and the fact that they have lowered interest rates. Why is he focusing on the ECB in order to pressure the U.S. Fed?
I think he's doing everything or he's trying everything in his power to pressure the Fed, including threatening to fire Powell. He has already in February fired two independent heads of institutions, mm-hmm. and they have appealed these firings. So now it's going to go to the Supreme Court. But apart from that, whether or not he can do it legally or not, he's trying everything in his power to influence the Federal Reserve. The ECB has a completely different policy and economic landscape that's not at all comparable to the United States. And when Donald Trump took over, the U.S. economy was a top performer. It was the envy of the world.
Yeah, that is true. Sandra Navid.
Now, stepping over to our next item specifically, we take a look at the international visit that the U.S. Vice President, J.D. Vance, has been conducting currently in India. Now, the aspect in terms of this particular visit has been where Vance has been welcomed or has welcomed the prospect of closer ties between Washington and Delhi. Now, Vance is on a four-day visit to India and has held talks with the country's Prime Minister, Narendra Modi. And India is also hoping to clinch a new trade deal as it looks to avoid new American tariffs. Let's have a listen to this report.
Vance has welcomed the prospect of closer ties between Washington and Delhi. Vance is on a four-day visit to India and has held talks with the country's Prime Minister, Narendra Modi. India is hoping to clinch a new trade deal as it looks to avoid American tariffs.
A family visit to India's historic Amber Fort. Most tourists aren't treated to such a spectacular welcome. But India has plenty of reasons to roll out the red carpet to U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance, his wife Usha, the daughter of Indian immigrants, and their three children. Although this trip has been billed as mostly personal, there's business to discuss.
We want to work together more, and we want your nation to buy more of our military equipment, which of course we believe is the best in class. Americans want further access to Indian markets. This is a great place to do business, and we want to give our people more access to this country. And Indians, we believe, will thrive from greater commerce in the United States.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi earlier welcomed the Vance family at his private residence. It's only weeks since the U.S. threatened India with tariffs of 27%, now temporarily reduced to 10%. But unlike its neighbor China, India has raced to the negotiating table.
The advantage that India has, compared to many other countries, is that it has a commitment from the Trump administration to launch talks. I mean, there's a commitment that came when Prime Minister Modi met President Trump in Washington back in February. At that point, they agreed to pursue a trade deal. And so those are talks that will begin very soon with the goal of reaching a deal by the fall.
India has already handed the U.S. plenty of gifts ahead of the negotiations, agreeing to buy more U.S. oil and defense equipment and receive deported migrants. Modi is hoping for something in return, a potential doubling of their trade to $500 billion within a few years. Now it's time for the adults in the room to sit down and agree on a deal.
Harsh Pant is the vice president of the Observer Research Foundation in Delhi. I asked him earlier about the progress made between the U.S. and India in agreeing a new trade deal.
I think the two officials from the two countries have been continuously engaged ever since Prime Minister Modi went to the U.S. earlier this year. And Prime Minister Modi and President Trump carved out a joint statement, which has been very ambitious in its scope, because India is trying to get to a bilateral trade agreement very soon compared to some of the other efforts that it has put in the past. So it's a very ambitious exercise that India is undertaking at a time of great complexity, global economic challenges, and its own internal economic challenges. Mm. But I think it's an exercise that India feels is important, not only in some ways to re-engage America on the new terms that the Trump administration has established, but also to ensure that India benefits from whatever is happening at the global economic level, particularly as the U.S. looks at China as an economic challenger.
How big is the pressure, you think, on India to get this deal done before the 90-day pause on U.S. tariffs expires?
I think the wider canvas that India is trying to engage with the U.S., as your report pointed out, that's much wider, because that's defense, there is energy, there is trade, and there is wider issue of immigration. So there are a bouquet of issues on the table which India wants the U.S. to engage with. And there is certainly the pressure that the earlier the deal is sorted out, the better it would be for the predictability of the relationship, in the relationship, and the stability of the relationship, which I think India values very much, because across different administrations in the U.S., India-U.S. relationship has grown in the last few decades, and India doesn't want to lose that momentum.
Mm. Is that the reason that India is getting this rather special treatment from the U.S., unlike other countries?
I think that's one reason, and particularly I think as the U.S. looks at Indo-Pacific as the center of gravity of global politics and economics, and at China as its main rival, it also looks at India as a very important partner in that very important geography. So I think certainly behind that, what you call it, the special treatment, there is some degree of anticipation that India perhaps would continue to grow its ties with the U.S. in the hope that the balance of power that is shaping up in the Indo-Pacific can serve the interests of both Washington and New Delhi.
Harsh Panther from the Observer.
Getting into the last leg of this afternoon's programming here on your number one talk radio station, we take a look specifically in an African, and specifically a Southern African context, the recent Lesotho South Africa Binational Commission second session engagement that took place in South Africa. Now, this is as the Kingdom of Lesotho is set to host this particular second session of the Binational Commission between South Africa and Lesotho, and a delegation of at least 15 South African cabinet ministers have met their Lesotho counterparts in terms of ahead of this particular arrival of the South African President Cyril Ramaphosa and the Lesotho Prime Minister Sam Matakane, who will witness the signing of an MOU between the two countries that actually aims to strengthen ties between the Kingdom and the Republic of South Africa. Let's have a listen to this report.
For the second session of the Binational Commission between the two countries, with a mandate to accelerate and deepen cooperation in areas such as water and energy, also to facilitate an ease of movement between the two neighbors.
When completed and operational, the new migration model will help resolve current border challenges and provide structural solutions to those seeking work, business opportunities, and residency across our borders. Equally important, there is an urgent need to foster efficient trade relations between our two countries in an advent of imposition of tariffs and the cut of the international assistance by the U.S. administration. As we meet today, we meet in a rapidly changing economic landscape that has ushered new uncertainties and threatens to derail the gains of the global trade architecture that was built over decades, if not centuries.
This binational meeting takes a place at a time Africa is facing challenges from both internal and external influences. Lesotho and South Africa has a unique opportunity to demonstrate cooperation.
We are meeting almost 2 years later, under difficult and challenging regional and global contexts. In our region, the security situation in the eastern part of our sister country, the Democratic Republic of Congo, has deteriorated. Millions of civilians, particularly women and children, have been displaced. Thousands have lost their lives and critical infrastructure destroyed. Calls for ceasefire and restraint seem to have fallen on deaf ears. But we should not get tired. We must continue to call for ceasefire, for peace, and for dialogue.
The host, Prime Minister Sam Matekane, and his counterpart, President Cyril Ramaphosa, will on Wednesday witness the signing of the MOUs as per the agreed items between the two states.
We welcome the launch of Phase 2 of the project. We recognize that this project contributes immensely to the growth of our economies, the development of our infrastructure, and ensures water security not only to the two countries, but potentially to other countries in the region. Secondly, we recognize that there is a need to address migration issues between the two countries and facilitate the free movement of people across the borders. In this regard, we assign the relevant ministries with the responsibility of developing a migration model that will address all the challenges that we are currently experiencing, taking into consideration the unique geographical locations of the two countries. We must stop criminality across our borders. Joint efforts to end stock theft, illegal mining, cybercrime, and other forms of criminality must be ensured to succeed, because these efforts will ensure that our two nations remain as good neighbors.
This meeting between Lesotho and South Africa resembles a closely connected family which must shape the ambitions of the present generation while also ensuring that it does not compromise the future of the next generation.
Now that ultimately does bring us up, dear listeners, close to the end. Well, it's about a minute away from the 2:30 mark, and ultimately does highlighting the end of today's particular program, that being the On The Radar here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. This ultimately sees us, hand over to the next program that is set to start or come on right after the ad break. And you can catch me later on the home run here on your number one talk radio station. And we'll see each other again, same time, same place.
Mukungu lelekwa tuko maikuto wa mina apidi kwa mavucha aziva. Muvele kisema app ato wakasi nchavu kamso, zakale liferide, mise kunani zencha. Kuzo wakwa kushimba lifera zari vuka kuya kwa lifasi la lifera fama kepe. Muvone maikuto amancha a imba app, muikutwe kulimusi emba santo ye nguyetuna. Muikole sifera fama kepe, marizo hola mina. Hamuvone. Imba encha ni encha falizwe ikopanya mifuta ya lifera matasa app ilini kukopanya naha ni kuhasa nyali nzwila mlimu. Zengwi zefu mani hamasifera sesifa app ya imba kize tatama. Elsin, ehangano, oshiherero, omaemuriro, Catholic, simane kakarunga, Africans, ni zengwi zengata. Mululi zeze kachenu, haiva mtavira kulisfera sa kireke ya mina, si ekezwe fa mkoloko walifera za imba, fa 081-2358-063, kapa mlumere imele kwa digital@omalite.com. Muzive ni kufumana imba kachenu, mkona kufumana fa App Store ni Google Play Store.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And
basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.